This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of Invest Talk. It's October 28th. We're almost into the month and Halloween time. Welcome to our Tuesday Invest Talk. Invest Talk is a kind of a roundtable discussion, and we hope you'll be part of it. 888-99-CHART is how you reach us. You can reach me right now. Or whenever you're listening, you still call that same number and leave your question. And remember, if you're traveling, you can always hear us live 4 to 5 Pacific time on investtalk.com. We're live on our website. And, of course, anywhere with iPads and with the Anywhere app, you can listen to us anytime you feel like it. Okay? We podcast this show every day. I always encourage you to share experiences, and particularly I would like you to talk about your portfolio, the mix of assets inside, what you have. When listeners ask about stocks, the mix should be part of the discussion. It's just not just about one stock. It should not be your portfolio. If it's about one stock, you're going to lose money eventually. You'll either be a big, huge hero or a big dunce because you have one stock. It'll either work or it won't. That's not managing the risk, though. That's taking ungodly amount of risk. No one should have any company make up more than about 5% of their portfolio. When they buy a stock, never buy more than about 5% of your portfolio. That's a good risk management tool. We at KPP Financial usually start our exposure at 3%. We may go to 5%, and the purchases could go higher than 5% as they go in value. And then as we talked about in the past, then you start thinking about rebalancing when one or two or a few positions become too much of your portfolio. So you got to be careful because stock can go down just as fast as they go up. Matter of fact, they go down faster than they go up. That's the norm. This also applies to shares of a stock in a company that you work for. You don't want to overexpose yourself to the company stock that you work for. This happens to a lot of people where they just, either they don't pay attention or they just love their company and the stock. They think it's going to continue to go up. But the more it dominates your portfolio, the more risks you are taking. And I understand you want to own your company stock. I don't have a problem with owning your company stock. But you got to remember that that's a risk. Even, Apple executives, Microsoft, all those big companies, they diversify themselves. They don't just hold on to their company stocks. No one would ever recommend that. Now, remember what happened to the employees of Enron and WorldCom when those companies went under? All the employees lost all their money. So they lost all their retirement benefits, all their money in their stock, in their 401k. Don't do that. Diversify. Diversify means moving to different industries, different sectors and industries of the market. We try not to expose ourselves more than 20% to any one sector or industry. It's just wise not to. So please do tell me about your portfolio. Let's talk about it. You can call right now, live 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk, or in between programs, you just can leave a question whenever you want. Here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART.
John, I'm calling from Walnut Creek. I listen to you on the radio. My question is about P/E ratios. When a company reports earnings, how often do these websites like Yahoo or Morningstar or any other financial websites, how often do they update the P/E ratios to reflect current earnings? Is there an easy way to find that somewhere on these web pages? I use Yahoo Finance a lot. And say if you're looking for a stock and you're thinking if it's a good time to buy or not, their earnings were poor, and I would assume that would affect the P/E. So I was just curious if there's a quick way to check to see how recent the financial data is. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, it depends on the website, because many of the websites don't use current P/E, current earnings. The earnings come in, or that changes if they had really good earnings, that would change the P/E. many of them use forward-looking PE ratio, PE. So, and that means they're using estimated earnings for the next 12 months. So you gotta first understand how your website calculates the price earnings ratio. Okay, so you know, if you don't understand how that works, then you're going to have a heck of a time trying to figure out what is the current, what is the PE ratio. And when you're looking at a PE ratio, what you want is forward-looking PE ratios, not what it was this year and the last 12 months earnings and is PE ratios this, you know, is this now. You want to know what you think it's going to be in the future. Why do you want to know that? Because every investor, every professional out there is looking at future earnings and therefore future PE ratios, and that's what they trade on. If you're looking at past while they're looking at the future, guess what? You're not on the same page, and you're going to lose a lot of money. You got to be on the same page as all the professionals are. What are they doing? That's really kind of important. What are they doing and why? So just bear that in mind. The best investments you can make in your house. The best investments you can make in your house. So what are some of the best investments? Of course, there's some. We're talking about getting return on your investment. How much money you can get out of an investment that you make in your house. That's going to be one of our main talking points. Also, one of our other talking points is sequence of returns in retirement. You probably haven't heard that term. Sequence of returns. This is an extremely important concept that you should understand in your portfolio when you enter retirement. And we're going to discuss it. Will the election move the market? Well, that tells you if Republicans take over the Senate, is that going to change the market? Does a Republican-dominated Congress move the market higher or lower? Does a Democratic Congress move it higher or lower? What's some of the history on that? What should we expect? That's going to be another talking point. And will there be another QE? Well, here we are ending QE. We're going to listen to the announcement this week from the Fed, and they're probably going to say, yes, our bond buying is ending now. And everybody expects it. Everybody thinks it. But have you seen, and everybody expected, including me, that when they cut and end QE, the interest rates will probably start to rise. And guess what? Interest rates aren't rising. Interest rates are not rising. They're falling. And yet the federal government has cut its spending from $85 billion a month buying treasuries and mortgages to push interest rates down to now it's only like 15. It's going to be zero. And interest rates are falling. So will there be another QE? Why am I even thinking that this might be another QE? Why do I think there very well could be? Aren't you curious as to why I'm thinking that there might be? And I'm not just talking about us going into recession. I'm not saying that. That's not the reason why I'm talking about why there'll be another QE. I mean, it's possible, but that's not my main point on this. Something I think you'll be very interested to at least hear my opinion on that. I may be wrong. You know, anybody who ever tells you that they're always right when they're talking about the stock market, interest rate direction, economy, then you know you're talking to a liar because it's just not possible to be right all the time. Anyway, so what did the market do today? Well, it was up in the morning. It's been up all day, but it really took off later on in the day, up 187 points for the Dow, up 77 points for the NASDAQ, and up 23 points for the S&P. So it's recovered 75% of the loss in what? How many days? 7 days? It's recovered 75% of the loss. It took about a month. So the rise has been much faster than the fall, and I'm telling you right now, that's not normal. Usually the fall is a lot faster than the rise. It tells you how different things are these days, isn't it? You know, you got to keep your options open. It's a very different market we're dealing with. Very different times. I mean, In your lifetime, when's the last time that the Fed has ever lowered their interest rates to zero or tried to push them down to zero? And I'll tell you this, it's never, never in my lifetime. Never. So we are in different times. Never has the Federal Reserve had such a large large amount of assets on their balance sheet, $4.5 trillion. Now, other people worry about that a lot. I really don't. Because I look at the size of our economy, which is what, 12, 13 trillion, and we have about a $4.5 trillion balance sheet. Did you know there's countries around the world that has equal amount of their annual income, which ours is what, 12, 13, 14 trillion, and they have that much in debt, the equal amount. We have what, a third? And these countries aren't falling apart. I'm talking about like Switzerland. So why can they carry so much debt? We can't. I mean, I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying I don't know how worried you should be about it. You should be more worried about the balance of budget, but not how much the Fed has in assets on its balance sheet, but how much money we're spending, our government, versus how much we're taking in. That's more of a worry. Anyway, it's kind of interesting stuff. We're kind of different than years past. So anyway, there's another way to get in the conversation if you want. You get to your questions to me. You can follow us on Twitter and send a message to us via Twitter now at InvestTalk. That's InvestTalk with two T's. You can get there. You can get your question to us to any way you want. You can do it the old-fashioned way by calling our 24-hour listener line. We're live on that line now, 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk. More free advice now from the archives. Investing should be more like watching paint dry or watching grass grow. If you want excitement, take $800 and go to Las Vegas. Paul Samuelson. We continue now with Invest Talk. And again, here's portfolio manager Steve Peasley.
The four best ways to invest in your own home, where you get the most out of the costs that you incur. Number one, and I don't know how much this will apply to us on the West Coast, but replacing old siding of a house. That happens very much in the Midwest and the East, in which they have siding on the house and it gets all worn looking. Here we have a lot of stucco, but that's one of the best returns you get. It makes it look really nice. Another one, kitchen remodel, but minor kitchen remodeling. Not major, which could cost really a lot of money. But we're talking more about replacing the facing on your cabinetry, not the whole cabinetry, or maybe replacing old appliances with energy efficient models, that kind of stuff. You can do inexpensive countertops and sinks and faucets, but you know you can get very expensive on that. So you got to be really, very careful. Decks. If you have a deck, redo it, make it look new, that's worth the money. These things, you get 70, 80, 90% of the money back. Even a new door, which is really cheap, new front door, looks really nice. Those are things that are well worth the effort. If you're going to sell your house and make the value, make it look nice, make it look attractive. How to position aggressive and conservative portfolios. What's a good Social Security strategy for you? Just some of the topics to be tackled on our Wednesday Wealth webinar coming up on November 12th. That's 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, everybody. 6:30 Pacific time. You can register now. Register now at investtalk.com, and it's free.
Coming up on the next Invest Talk, diversifying assets by taxability can also be important in building a successful financial planning strategy, planning for retirement with tax diversification. That's our talking point on the Wednesday, October 29th Invest Talk, and we hope you'll listen to that podcast. And remember, you can join in the discussion live between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time by calling 888-99-CHART. Consider that an invitation.
You're listening to Invest Talk, and we're glad you're here today. Have you increased your 401k contributions lately? Why not? Talk to Steve about it. Any money matter is open for discussion. 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's go talk to James in Sonoma. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty good. My question revolves around a strategy. Once you retire, you and I are the same age. Once you retire, and some of my friends are doing this already, you take your portion, small little bit, of your IRA, and convert that over to a Roth. Now, I realize there are tax consequences, but since you have no actual paychecks coming in, we're thinking of a strategy. Some of my friends have done this, where they take a small portion of it, and then you know, down the line, they get the income that is not being taxed. So they would do this to all of it because that would be too much. But just say $20,000-$25,000 at a shot. What's your thinking on that? Have you ever heard of anybody doing that?
Oh yes. It's not uncommon. One of the primary reasons you're doing that is because when you're in retirement and you can start collecting off your IRA, you're usually in a much lower tax bracket when you enter retirement. In other words, you're not making money anymore. So therefore, the money you take out of the IRA is taxed at the very low rate. Okay, you may not need it, but at least it's taxed at the very lowest rate. That's the whole idea. Then you put that money in the Roth, and then it can continue to grow. James, it works if you don't need the money. Okay, you know what I'm saying? Because if you're in retirement, you don't need the money. They're going to force you to take it at 70.5 out of a regular IRA or 401k.
And that's part of the strategy behind that.
That's right.
70.5, they're trying to lower that. Admittedly, they're only doing it like $25,000 at a shot, but my point is they've only got really 5 years to do it.
Yep.
But they're trying to lower that down a little bit and that's one of the strategies.
Yeah, it makes sense on that farther end, because if you grow your money all that time to your 70.5 from 65 to 70, while you're growing your regular IRA, that means there's more required minimum distributions that you have to take and whatever tax bracket's going to push you in. This way, you're trying to reduce it, that there won't be the required minimum distribution out of your regular IRA will be less. Okay, because you've taken $25,000 out. Now, people do that, and there's a good, sound explanation as to why. Okay, but it only works, James, if you really don't need the money. If you need that $25,000 to spend, then you're defeating the purpose of taking it out and put it in a Roth. You see what I'm saying?
No, we're not going to need the money. It's just a question of they're trying to. I had never heard anybody doing this before, and I said, well, I'll give you guys a call and see if.
It's not a bad strategy. It's not a bad strategy. Now, if you're already making buku money and you're already at the highest tax bracket, then it makes no sense. You know, and if you're at the very high tax bracket in retirement, you're not saving yourself anybody adding more money to it. It's only if you're in the lowest tax bracket and you want to keep it low, as possible, then it works.
Well, that would be the idea if you're in the 20%, if you're not making a paycheck.
Right.
Say you try to keep your earnings down to the 20 or 25% tax bracket.
Correct.
Doing it that way. That's why they're doing small amounts at a time.
That's correct. And it makes sense. It does make sense.
Okay.
James, appreciate
All
the
right.
call.
Well, I just never heard anybody about that. Okay, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah, I've talked to people about that. It always depends on when are you retiring, how much money do you have, and how much of an impact it can have. And it can be quite impactful in a certain level of income and wealth that you might have. Anyway, sequence of returns in retirement. That's also important. What this refers to is, when you start retiring, you start taking money out of your IRA, your 401k, whatever it is, and you have it invested. If you have, everybody uses, I think my average return is going to be this much per year over this many years, therefore I can withdraw this much. That only works if you don't have any big downdraws at the beginning of the year, or beginning of your retirement, the first few years of retirement. The sequence of your returns is important. If it was steady year after year after year, a certain amount, then it would be not a problem. But if you're in the stock market, it could be up big, it could be down big. And what if you're down big the first 2 or 3 years? and you're withdrawing money out of that retirement, you're not going to make it up. It's going to be much more difficult. It's already difficult to make it up, and you're going to take money out. So withdrawing money in the early years while you're losing value in the portfolio is going to be very detrimental to your long-term financial health in retirement. Now, how do you combat that? I don't want to bring something up and then say, well, how do you come? One of the best effective ways to do it is have an income strategy as part of that retirement, you know, 401k IRA. Have an income stream somehow. Now, you can do it different ways. You could do it with bonds, and you could do it with dividend stocks, even though they still lose the value. But you can take that stream of income, and that's what you want to spend. You can do it with annuities, even though I don't like annuities. I used to be able to say, well, you can do it with CDs, and I don't mind CDs, but with hardly any payment on them. The Federal Reserve has made sure that you can't make money on your CDs these days. So I can't use that anymore as an example, you know, to produce an income stream. But that's the way you do it. Try to produce an income stream. Okay? Our next day for portfolio reviews at our home office in Southern California is October 29th. Guess what? That's tomorrow. That's a Dana Point. There's a new day for retirement reviews in San Ramon, and that's November 19th. You don't need an account. If you don't need an account with KPP Financial, just an interest in a professional second opinion, you can do that. There's certainly no obligation of any kind on my part. Just go to investtalk.com and then click on Make an Appointment. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
This is the Tuesday, October 28th edition of Invest Talk with portfolio manager Steve Peasley. Diversifying assets by taxability can also be important in building a successful financial planning strategy. Planning for retirement with tax diversification. That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. Please join us then. And there's still plenty of time today to get in touch. 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk. Let's return to our role answering those questions. And we're going to go to a podcast subscriber who called in and left a question. Oh, go to caller first. I'm sorry. Let's go to Emily in Daly City. How are you doing, Emily?
Hi, good. How are you?
Thanks for calling.
Well, I had a question about Gilead Sciences. I recently purchased it and was wondering what you think of their short-term prospects.
Gilead, G-I-L-D is the symbol. Okay?
Yeah.
I think after hours. Didn't they report after hours and it was down sharply after hours?
Yeah, they released earnings.
Yeah. So long-term, Gilead is very, very strong company. I like the company, but they had a hiccup in this most recent report. And I didn't read the whole report. I just saw the kind of the headlines. But as far as a company and long-term prospects, this is a very good company. Gilead Sciences develops therapeutics to treat viral, fungal, respiratory, and cardiovascular diseases. Growth rate has been running about 100% a quarter for the last three quarters in sales. So that, you know, that's pretty strong. And earnings, of course, has reflected that. Earnings are pretty strong growth, too. They just had a hiccup, and I think this might be a hiccup to give you a reason to buy it. You know, in other words, Emily, if it goes down, I need to read the report and find out, well, why did they have a little problem with earnings? What was the issue? And if the issue is a short-term thing, I think you buy it on any dip that you get because you haven't gotten hardly any dip. You know, so.
Oh, okay. But what about for their short-term? For the short-term, what do you?
For the short-term, it's going to be volatile. You're going to have, because of the earnings issue, I think they beat on sales, but maybe costs were high or something. Something's going on. I don't know what it was after hours exactly. So you may get a dip, and I think you buy the dip. Short term, it could be volatile. Short term meaning the next few weeks, a month or two or three. It could be volatile. So when it does give you a dip, which it did back in March, a pretty strong one, and the most recent dip in the market didn't really affect it very much. I mean, not enough to say, oh, there's a great buying opportunity. Not really. So you need to buy it on a weakness because it's going to be strong long term. Thanks for the call. Okay, we're ready for InvestTalk 101. InvestTalk 101. Which bonds are the safest? Which bonds are the safest bonds? U.S. Treasury bonds, municipal bonds, corporate bonds, insured municipal bonds, insured corporate bonds. Which ones would be safest? Well, anytime you hear the word U.S. Treasury, that is always the safest. Absolute safe. Absolute. Remember, they're backed by the federal government. Corporate bonds, no matter what, are backed by corporations. And yeah, no matter how big they are, they're not as safe as the federal government. Remember, the federal government always has earnings forever, as long as there's a United States. Municipal bonds, they're safer than corporate bonds. They are, because they're backed by the municipality. But there's been municipalities go bankrupt. But the full faith and credit of the U.S. government backs U.S. Treasury bonds. Recession, inflation, war, bonds always get paid. U.S. government bonds have never not paid, and they probably will never not be paid in your lifetime. And I know there's a bunch of doom and gloomers out there that, well, we have so much debt and stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But America is not going to disappear. They're very liquid. Do you know how this works? Do you know how they buy corporate? Do you know how the federal government sells its bonds? There's a group of 20 primary bond dealers which are required to buy large quantities of treasuries every time there's an offer to sell the treasuries by the government. They can then sell them in the secondary market to you and me, but they have to buy them. So, and how do they set interest rates? They bid. That's a bid process of what the rates will be. In other words, I'll buy $2 billion of the $10 billion offering. I want $2 billion of that, and I'll pay you 2.18% interest. So it's a bid. And the government gets these bids from these 20 dealers. Then it averages them out, and that's what the rate is. Isn't that interesting? You can, instead of buying them in the secondary market, buy them from these primary dealers or somebody else, you can buy them direct. For as little as $100, you can go through Treasury Direct. That's a website. Treasury Direct, they'll take the money out of your checking account, send you a bond, plus interest. You can do it yourself. You don't have to pay anybody to do anything. And that's InvestTalk 101. Is there a topic you want to know more about? Well, just get in touch with me. We're right here at 888-99-CHART. You can also write me a note or click on Contact Steve at InvestTalk.com. That's an email directly that will come directly to me. Love to hear from you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? How about the elections? It's coming around the corner. Right around the corner. Will the election move the market up, down, sideways? Will there be any movement because of the elections? Well, there's been lots of studies of this, about political parties and elections. And the only time it really moves the market, and even then it's questionable whether it does, is when there's a president that has the backing of the Congress. In other words, they're both on the same from the same party. Republican Congress, Republican president. Democratic president, Democratic Congress. When there's a split, in other words, there's Democratic Congress and a Republican president or Democratic president, usually the market does not react to that. This is, you can't show that there's much reaction. Now, if you ask about Democratic presidents or Republican presidents, which one of those party presidents generally means the stock market is better or worse, Democrats win by far. When a Democrat is a president, and I can't tell you if the reason for this, there are speculation because usually there's more government spending and that usually boosts the economy and it moves. Whereas Republicans can get in, usually it's less spending. But, it's hard to know that for sure. But that's one of the major major opinions by people out there. But it's very difficult. There's been no, really, in midterm elections really are kind of meaningless to the stock market, really. There's been no evidence to show it pushes stocks up or down, no matter who wins, Democrats, Republicans, doesn't. Now let's return to answering some questions. Our podcast subscribers can get their questions to me anytime they want. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Matt. I'm calling from Chicago. I listen to you guys out on the podcast. My question was for Goodyear Tire, symbol's GT. I was wondering if now would be a good time to buy it. Thank you. Bye.
Well, Goodyear Tire has come down quite some ways from $28.70 from a high, which was just this year, March, down to a low of 1887, and that's just recently. And today, you know, it's come off that low. I mean, excuse me, it's at 21.91 today, 21.91, and the low was 1887 just not that long ago, just a week or two ago. And that's what the market's been doing. But what about the fundamentals? Well, they're going to make $2.81 this year per share after making $2.66 last year. So that's 6% higher, and next year it's going to be another 8% higher, $3.04. But sales have shrunk. Now, admittedly, they are shrinking less than they were a year ago, but they're still shrinking about 5% year over year. The year ago, they were shrinking like 12%. So, because of that, the P.E. ratio is very, very low. They are able to increase their earnings, but they're shrinking their sales, and therefore they have to either do it many different ways, but probably, you know, they are either buying back shares, which it looks like they are buying some back, or they are cutting costs, you know, not hiring back employees, cutting costs somehow. But they also have a lot of debt. This is what worries me the most. Their debt is pretty big, and even though they have a high cash flow kind of business, and maybe they can service that debt, but that debt is pretty heavy. That's why the P.E. ratio is so low at 7. People are, oh yeah, your earnings are going up, but how come you can't keep that up forever, not with debt in, sales falling. Something's got to break. Something's got to happen. Now, I'll say this. Insiders have been buying for the last, since March, there's been 3 big buys from insiders since March. So you know the insiders are feeling better about their company at $21, $22 a share. Now, whether they're right or wrong, I don't know. Insiders only owns about 1%. So we'll see. Probably, you know, everybody's thinking about Goodyear Tire Company because auto sales are doing well, right? Well, that's why you think about it. Auto sales are doing well. Shouldn't tires do well too? Well, maybe they should, but this would be a company that I'm not prepared to buy, really. I just don't like the shrinking sales. The KPP Premium Newsletter is coming out Friday. It comes out every Friday. It's a quick and easy source of investing information and perspective. It's quick and easy to read. It keeps you informed of what's going on in the market, in the economy, and investing in general. It's $9.99 a month. You get it every Friday. You can sign up for a year at a discount or take it on a monthly basis. It's up to you. To subscribe, just go to investtalk.com.
InvestTalk insiders receive weekly articles from Steve on useful topics, stuff you can use. They get access to a whole library of webinars, too. Sign up for free on investtalk.com.
Hi, my name is Tim. I listen to you almost every day driving home. I have a question, and I've heard you say it a few times on the show, but while I'm driving, I never get a chance to write it down. I'd like to know, see if you could go over exactly how you put a value on a stock. You have a little formula, and it'd be helpful to me. I'm a new investor, and I would just be interested in hearing that one more time, how you explain it, so I can write it down and use it. Thanks, and I love your show. Bye-bye.
Okay, I talk about on the show 2 quick and easy ways to do it, very quick and easy. But just so you know, valuating the stock can be very complex and laborious, and we have some very complex formulas. But when you're just looking and you want to quickly understand if this is overvalued, undervalued, you can use a couple of methods that are pretty fast. And one of them is use the last high and low of the last 5 years of the P.E. ratio. Let's say the P.E. ratio is 10 on the low side and 20 on the high side. And then you look at next year's earnings per share. Okay, let's say that's a dollar. I'm making it as you see. I can make it easy. And use the high and low. 10 times a dollar means the low of the stock is $10. And 20 times a dollar means that the range is $10 to $20, right? $20 for a dollar's worth of earnings. $10 to $20 is the range of that stock. Well, if the stock is selling near 10, that means it's undervalued, right? Because that's the low end. If it's 9 PE right now, you go, oh, man, that means a low PE is 9, not 10. You see what I'm saying? But another one is used by calculating or multiplying the growth rate times next year's earnings projections. How do I know what the growth rate is? Well, let's say they make a dollar per share this year, and next year they're estimated to make $1.20. That's a 20% growth rate, right? From $1 to $1.20. So you take the number 20, multiply it times $1.20, which is next year's earnings per share, and you get $24. That's what the stock is worth. Now, that works very good for stocks that are growing and not too small and not too big. That'd be just right, like Goldilocks. You can see why. If they're a very large company, well, they can't grow very fast. If it's a very small company, well, they grow hundreds of percent sometimes at a time, and you can't get a good feel. So the mid-cap area, that multiplying earnings per share next year times growth rate works pretty decently. Remember, it's a quick and easy way to try to get a handle on value of the company. But don't rely. It's not gospel. Nothing is gospel in the stock market, just so you know. Anyways, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We saw the market move up strongly today. It's been like 5 or 6 days in a row where it's moved up pretty strongly after about a month of where it was pretty weak. So where are we? Do we make up all our losses? Well, it depends on what index you're talking about, not the small caps. Maybe the Qs, not the S&P, not the Dow, not yet. Getting closer, we'll see. But this move up has been on less volume too, so just remember that. That's kind of a concern of mine. Not a lot of strong volume, but it's still a move up. So you've got to consider this. I sent an email to many people saying that a few weeks ago when we got to about almost a 10% correction on the S&P, that this is a correction we thought we would get. And you might want to start teasing into the market. The market should, remember we're moving into November, December, January, February, the best time of the year. It's very possible that this is only a correction, and we're not going to, this little 10% correction, and that's it. That might be it for the year. We'll see. We'll know by next week, won't we? We kind of know. If it breaks above its old highs, it's probably on another leg up. We have just a few minutes left. Call us now at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics. So please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time.
Would you call yourself a conservative investor? One who is open to some careful speculation? Or are you ready to do whatever it takes to hit a home run? There's a way to find out exactly what the truth is about you and risk. Use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. Ask Steve about it. You can reach him now at 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? Market's had a pretty good recovery from its correction. about a 10% correction. Not quite. From top to bottom, it was about 9.9%. Close to a 10% correction. Doesn't mean that we won't have more correction because the market has been very, very volatile. But, you know, as it rises, you looks like we might be in for another up leg in the bull market phase going into the end of the year. And I say that only because the end of the last couple of months in the year are usually pretty positive. And October is known for putting in a bottom. So maybe it's put in its bottom. Of course, watch it crash the next 2-3 days. And then, therefore, I'm all wet. That's possible. Earnings have been pretty good. Economic numbers have been pretty steady for us. Not so good for Europe and China and a couple other places. Not so good. Our dollar has been pretty strong, which I don't know how positive that is. Matter of fact, let's talk about that. Will we have another QE? Remember, we're ending QE3. The Federal Reserve is ending QE3 as early as this month. No more buying of bonds. And the effort of their QEs was to drive interest rates down, and they've been very successful about that, driving interest rates down. So they lowered, remember, the government doesn't really control interest rates. It influences interest rates, but doesn't control it. The Federal Reserve only controls one rate, and that's the overnight rate, basically one rate. The overnight rate it uses or charges banks to borrow money from the federal government, and that's near zero. So banks borrow the money, and then they lend it to you and me, and therefore they can lend it to you and me much cheaper because they're getting very cheap money. See how that works? Also, the government can influence the market rate, which is all other interest rates, the treasuries, everything else is market rate, what the market decides what it should be. But it can influence that by buying mortgages and U.S. treasuries, which it's been doing. It bought as much as $85 billion a month. They've increased their balance sheet to $4.5 trillion. But now they're coming to the end of that. And you would think, and I've said this before, as they cut, you would think interest rates would start to rise. But in fact, interest rates have gone down. Just the opposite where most people think they should have had done so far. Why is that? Well, first of all, China stepped in, a couple other countries stepped in to buy the bonds. The federal government is no longer buying. But more importantly, our economy looks like, is though it's not that robust, it still looks relatively strong. And therefore, our dollar has gone up in value against other currencies. So, if you're a foreign investor and you look at the U.S. Treasuries and say, hey, that's pretty safe money there because they always pay. That's 100% guaranteed safe. And you take your euro or your yuan or your peso and you go out and buy U.S. Treasuries and the dollar goes up in value. Remember, you're using a peso or a euro to buy it. The dollar goes up in value. You get a double bang because you get the yield or whatever it is, even though it might be small, plus the increase in value of the dollar against your currency. So there's been a lot of people coming in, buying those things, driving our currency up. Okay, another reason why oil is down and other commodities down, because our currency is strong. Because we're our economy. So, back to QE. If our currency gets too strong, that is really going to put a damper on our economy and, more importantly, on emerging markets economies. Because they have borrowed a ton of money in recent years. Borrowed. They're going to have to pay that money back. So they have, what we call the carry trade. And what's happening is certain things are unwinding. I don't want to go into all of it. It's going to hurt their economy. It's going to hurt their economy. And why is it going to hurt their economy? Because their borrowing costs are so high. The dollar gets stronger. They don't have the money. They have to cut their spending. So why would we have another QE? Because the Federal Reserve may want to weaken our dollar. Weaken it. They want to weaken the dollar. They got to weaken the attractiveness of our dollar. Before I close, one of our most comprehensive webinars ever we have ever done is coming up on November 12th at 6:30 Pacific Time. the A to Z of retirement planning. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. If you want to sign up for the conference, go to investtalk.com. And for everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening today, and we'll see you again next time.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.